Welcome to Logical, the UE's first and still the only regular legal podcast. My name's Tim Elliott. Our expert is the managing partner of the Dubai-based legal firm HPL Yamalova and Plethka in Dubai, Ludmila Yamalova. Good to talk to you.
Good to be here with you, Tim, as always.
This episode is everything you need to know, should know, want to know about powers of attorney. So, Ludmila, how do you empower someone else to act on their behalf in the UAE? Is it a formal process? Is it a simple representation and or agreement? Is that sufficient proof? How does it work?
Yeah, so the UAE actually requires a fairly formal process to empower someone to act on your behalf, and that is by virtue of an official or formal power of attorney. Not only that, but in the UAE, the use of power of attorney is quite common, so much more common than in most other countries. So it is a very important topic to discuss and understand how exactly this works. In general terms, perhaps unlike so many other countries, just a simple kind of agreement or representation or statements that you are authorized to act on someone's behalf in the UAE are not effective and not really sufficient. So in most cases, you do need to have an official power of attorney that's issued by a formal notary or a government agency. And this, by the way, is certainly anytime you approach someone on behalf of someone else with any government entities, and they will always require to see that there's an actual power of attorney. But even amongst private parties, by the way, there's a general practice that anyone that you may be communicating that's acting as an agent or on behalf of someone else, that they have a power of attorney to actually do that. And the practice has evolved that even amongst private parties, first thing that they would request is, okay, let me see that you have power of attorney to act on somebody's behalf. One interesting example, and very close to home, is for lawyers. So for lawyers, the general practice is that anytime anyone retains a lawyer, that they issue a power of attorney to their lawyer. And this, by the way, applies not just to local advocates or lawyers who represent clients in court, but also to legal consultants like us. And that's just the general practice. So this is very different from how things would develop or how lawyers work in other countries, let's say in Europe or in the US. In the US, just a simple engagement agreement or agreement with the client, between the client and the law firm, is all that you need for representation. And even for that lawyer to represent the client in court, there is never a requirement of a power of attorney. In fact, that's just a non-existent practice. Whenever a lawyer represents a client before the court, just the fact that an attorney appears before the court is a representation and evidence that that person had been authorized and empowered by a client to represent them. This is why this topic is so important to highlight and discuss, because in the UAE is one of the few countries where I have witnessed the importance and the prevalence of power of attorney in kind of our day-to-day life. Another example is for local advocates. Whenever they represent a client in the court, the first thing they need to do is they need to upload on the court system or present to the court the power of attorney that authorizes them to act for the client or represent that client. So just by virtue of, for example, appearing before a judge or submitting documents, that in itself is not enough. And so they do need, for the case to kind of start progressing, that local advocate has to submit the power of attorney to the court and have to register or link their POA, and that's a short version for the power of attorney, they need to link the POA with the case file for the court to now accept the local advocate as being official representative of the client. That's a very interesting example, because this is perhaps the only country that I know of where power of attorney for lawyers is not only often used, but is required And because of that, so in the UAE, this is just one example for lawyers, but everything else in the UAE also kind of seems to be based in one way or another on a power of attorney. And so there's so many other types of transactions, for example, real estate transactions, where there is examples of people acting on behalf of somebody else on the basis of power of attorney. So because it's so prevalent in the UAE, it's so pervasive in terms of how we live and do business here, it can be either extremely helpful or extremely dangerous.
What do you mean dangerous?
Well, dangerous because this is an official document where you ultimately authorize somebody else to represent you and basically be you, if you will. So whatever it is they do on the basis of this power of attorney, that's basically acting as if it was you that was acting. You are authorizing somebody else to do this, basically to be your agent. So you know, the way it works in legal terms is, let's say if it's me, that I give you the power of attorney. I'm the principal, then I give you, my agent, the power of attorney. So when you're acting on the basis of power of attorney, whatever it is that you do on the basis of that, it's like me doing it. It's basically equates to the same thing. So therefore, I better know who exactly it is that I give the power of attorney and the scope of the power of attorney, so that it's not either intentionally or unintentionally misused. And therefore, it's that much more important to consider not only who it is that you're granting the power of attorney, but also the scope of this power of attorney, what powers it is that you're conferring on the agent.
What does a POA look like? I have a picture in my mind, but who executes? And as a lawyer, so the final part of this question, can you sign a POA?
So no, actually, we cannot sign POAs as lawyers, and that's because in the UAE, for a POA or power of attorney to be valid, it needs to be notarized, i.e. it needs to be signed by a notary. And a notary in the UAE is a person who is specifically licensed to provide notarial services and to ultimately witness somebody's signature and to notarize the document. Lawyers in the UAE, just by virtue of us being lawyers, we don't have that authority. These are very specifically designated and licensed individuals that work for a government authority that have this notarial powers. And the government authority that we're talking about here, it's the courts. So the notary services, wherever they may be in whatever emirate, they sit under the umbrella of the courts. So in Dubai, for example, it's under the Dubai courts. And therefore they are licensed by the Dubai courts to provide notarial services and notarizations. And therefore, whenever you have a notary or a POA notarized in the UAE, it will actually have a stamp of a court, right? So let's say if you do it in Dubai, it'll have the Dubai court's stamp on it. So obviously me as a lawyer, I cannot do that, but it looks like a very official document, and it looks like a document actually issued by the court. And it looks that way is because those who actually have the authority to notarize a document are licensed by the court, and they are subject to the jurisdiction of the court. And therefore, whenever the document is issued, it bears the stamp of the court. And so in Dubai, it would be the Dubai courts. In Iraq, it would be the Iraq courts. And those emirates that sit under the federal system would be the Ministry of Justice. So it is a very official document. It's, I guess perhaps one example is that in the U.S., a notary, like I could actually be a notary. It's like a special sort of designation, but it's not, you know, one actually to be a notary, you don't even need to be a lawyer in the U.S. And so you just need to be admitted as a notary. And these notaries can sit in post offices, they can have their own in banks. So they're just a person, let's say a bank representative who works for a bank and then also has notary powers. So or post offices or printing shops, whoever it is that ultimately obtains the notary services, that you just go to that person, they put a stamp, their own stamp, and then you say the notary person with such and such license number, for example, and that's it. So it looks a lot more informal, if you will, compared to the POAs that are issued in the UAE.
Okay, that's interesting. So it's very much an official document, piece of documentation. Is there specific legislation in this country, in the UAE, that governs the requirement or the process?
In fact, yes. And there are two perhaps like broad sources of legislation. One is based on the UAE Civil Transactions Law. And then the other one is the UAE Crimes and Punishment Law, and that's the UAE Criminal Code. And so the Criminal Code comes in when there is potential allegations of misuse of the power of attorney. And there's specific clauses and provisions in the UAE Criminal Law that relate to misuse or abuse of the power of attorney. And then the Civil Transactions Law is ultimately where this kind of a principal agent relationship is formulated and is defined and further rights and sort of obligations and limitations are embedded in connection with the specific document that's called the power of attorney. So those are basically two kind of sources of legislation, and there are the UAE Civil Transactions Law in particular has very specific references to the different types of limitations and conditions that are attached to different types of POA. So, for example, want to sell property, or if you want to issue to somebody to sell your shares in the company. So the law has these different provisions that kind of addresses different aspects of the power of attorney and the powers and conditions that are linked to specific powers.
Okay. Where do you find a notary?
Each emirate has its own notary centers, mm-hmm. And that's because the notarial services of notaries sit under the umbrellas of the courts, the relevant courts, and the UAE has multiple court systems. Without getting into the nuances of the UAE legal framework, the Dubai, for example, is subject to its own court system. So Dubai has its own notary services that are based under the umbrella of the Dubai courts. Abu Dhabi has its own court system, so that would be the Abu Dhabi courts and the notaries that sit under the umbrella of Abu Dhabi. Same with Ras Al Khaimah. But for example, all the other four emirates sit under what's called the UAE, the federal system. And the federal system is subject to the UAE Ministry of Justice. So it's a kind of a federal system. So the Ministry of Justice has its own centers, notary services. So these are some examples. So it's not like there's one particular place that's sort of subject to the same authority. Depending on where you are, these notary services are based in different locations. So in Dubai, there's multiple notary services, depending on kind of geographically where it's most convenient for you. You don't necessarily need to go to a notary service that's close to you geographically. It's the choices. There's a freedom of choice in that regard, but many different notary services. And I have to tell you, over the years, and you probably can remember and relate to this, the number of these notary centers have increased. And that's because, again, the reliance on POAs and therefore notarized, obviously, POAs with time continues to increase, and therefore the number of centers and the number of notaries continues to increase as well. And then these are basically the different types of notary services in physical form that you could find in the UAE.
Okay, so these are physical centers. How many in each emirate? How do you actually meet a notary, and how do you get documents notarized in this modern age of super high speed Wi-Fi, internet, etc.?
So each emirate has its own notary centers, and the number of centers, I cannot tell you exactly how many there are in Dubai, but I know there's perhaps dozens in Dubai.
Right.
There's many. You could even do just that the court has its own notary, and then there is an extension of the court, like in Dubai, it's our Barsha notary, for example, kind of close to RTA. So each emirate has its own centers, and they are continuing to grow. Interestingly enough, why also it's continued to grow, because now, as of a few years ago, certain individuals have now, the law was amended to authorize private notaries. So these are individuals who actually get, so outside of kind of the physical umbrella of the court, they can also be sort of private notaries that would have similar physical stamps, but they won't be sitting in, for example, in the court notary, and they're called private notaries. So those notaries are actually a lot more flexible. I mean, they're a little more expensive, but they can even come to you So in addition to you going to these some physical centers, some of these private notaries, or most of these private notaries, I guess that's why they are called private notaries, that they can come to you and they can meet you in your location that's convenient to you. So that's kind of a new concept only over the last several years. So otherwise, it's the physical locations that are the sort of offshoots, if you will, of the courts. And then you have these private notaries that will come to you. And then... more importantly, is that over since COVID, and that's kind of the blessing of COVID and the lockdowns, is that notary services have now been made available digitally. You can now apply for any kind of notarization of sort of documents and POAs in particular through the online system.
Okay, so if you want to do it online, how do you do it?
So there are different ways of doing it, and it kind of depends on which emirate you're in and a number of things. Let's say if you're a resident in the UAE or you're not resident within the UAE, inside the UAE or not. So there's a little bit of kind of nuances there, but there are different ways of doing it. So for example, if you are based in Dubai and you want to issue a power of attorney in Dubai or out of Dubai notary, then there is you can do this through the Dubai Courts portal. And so to have your own portal into the Dubai court system, you need to be a UAE resident. And if you're a UAE resident, you need to activate your UAE pass. So once if you're a resident, you can activate your UAE pass. And then through the UAE pass, you set up your own Dubai Courts portal access. And then from there, there's a specific request. Once you're kind of in the Dubai Courts portal, you have a specific request for you to apply to get a document notarized. So that's one way of doing it. And that, by the way, once you have this UAE pass, you can do it from anywhere. So you could be outside of the country, and all of this can be done digitally, which, by the way, I'm sure you'll remember, is a huge, huge, huge departure from how things used to be. I remember during COVID, I mean, that was one of the big issues for a lot of people, because all of a sudden they couldn't come into the UAE, and yet they had to have things done in the UAE. And so they could authorize to somebody else to do things for them, but they needed to have a power of attorney. But to have a power of attorney at the time, you can only really do it physically. And if you had a foreign power of attorney, it would take weeks, if not months, for that power of attorney to be properly legalized for the purposes of being used in the UAE. So the process was very lengthy and expensive. And that's why for years and years, we would recommend our clients to just literally fly into the UAE for one day just to give a power of attorney and then fly out, literally. And we've done a lot of these in the past, just people fly in for a day, give a power of attorney and leave. And that's because it was cheaper and way, way, way faster, but also cheaper. Imagine people to just fly into the country to issue a POA locally than to have a foreign POA go through all the kind of procedural requirements of being able to be accepted in the UAE. So basically that's, so there's anything to do. I remember during COVID when they introduced the online system, it was like people were in disbelief, and it wasn't right away publicly advertised because it was being evolved gradually. But it was truly revolutionary for the UAE. So it was huge. Now it just became very ubiquitous. It's sort of very common, matter of fact. So that's one way of doing it. So the Dubai Courts portal, or let's say if you're in Ras Al Khaimah or in Abu Dhabi, you would be doing it through those courts portals. The other way of doing it is through the UAE Ministry of Justice. And the UAE Ministry of Justice not only applies to those emirates, for example, that would sit under the federal system, but also anybody else who wants to get a POA from the Ministry of Justice. The reason for the Ministry of Justice is sort of otherwise kind of referred to as MOJ. So the reason that's a convenient tool, perhaps even more convenient tool, is to use the Ministry of Justice, you don't need to be a resident in the UAE. So this option is specifically interesting or of relevance to those, for example, who are not based in the UAE and don't have UAE residence and therefore do not have UAE pass and therefore don't have access into their own court portal. So this option is available to anyone who can be based anywhere in the world and is not a resident of the UAE. So that's perhaps one of the more, that's again, also an evolution, by the way. So first, I think we noticed that the digital services, notary services were introduced by the Dubai courts, and then the UAE Ministry of Justice followed shortly. So that's another option.
It's amazing. 4 years later, we're still marveling at the fact that so much can be done online from a judicial point of view. I can see in your eyes, you still love the fact that it's been made so much easier. Does a POA just have to be in Arabic? Can it be in any other language, Ludmila?
That's another evolution. And perhaps before I kind of jump into that, one thing I also wanted to add is that in terms of how the process of notarization works, and this is directly tied to the language that's being used, is that you submit, be it through the Dubai courts or through MOGA, you submit your draft of the POA. And if you submit it to Dubai, then the notary will just call you to confirm. So they'll just literally, you made a submission. Because remember, you're going through the Dubai court portal. So, and that, which means is that A, you're a resident, B, you're signing in, you already have a court portal through which, into which you sign through your UAE pass. So you've already been vetted and confirmed or reconfirmed and verified in every way by the time you've entered. Mm-hmm. So therefore, whenever you make a request through your court portal, basically your identity has already been established and verified. So that's why when you've submitted the draft, the POA, then the notary calls you and confirms, hey, this is you, you submitted, yes, done, basically. And the process itself can just take just a few minutes. And we have had it done in just as quickly as, you know, just an hour or two. So that's basically if you do it through the Dubai courts. If you do it through MOJ or the Ministry of Justice, so what the notary will do is they'll send you a video link first with an OTP, and then you link, you open that video link, put an OTP, and then the notary basically is this video interview, if you will, a confirmation that they'll confirm the text of the POA. Say yes, yes. That too, by the way, both of these kind of interfaces have evolved. And because back in the when the Dubai courts just started doing this, they required a video interview as well. And they would send you kind of a time for the video interview, and then depending on which technology we're using, Teams or Zoom, or they use their own portal to do it. They establish the video call. So that was a little more, involved and a little more burdensome, if you will. But now the court system has evolved to such an extent that, because, as I mentioned earlier, you get sort of verified already when you submit this, these kind of what used to be kind of maybe bureaucratic, the confirmations, video confirmations have kind of evolved as well. So now it's a lot faster, and just a simple phone call seems to verify enough for the purpose of the authorities, so that they don't need to go through the scheduling of an interview the way it was kind of early on. So the one thing that used to prolong the attestation or finalization of the POA was the language, right? Mm. So obviously, because the UAE is an Arabic speaking country, the official language here is Arabic. But many people who grant POAs are not Arabic speakers. And so the POAs would also have to be in multiple languages, so Arabic, let's say, and English. And so, but the English translation had to be attested by a certified legal translator. So you could not just submit the draft of the POA with both languages through the system and for the notary approve that. In the past, it actually required you would draft the Arabic, then you would go to the legal translator, the legal translator. The legal translator would add the stamp that basically the translation match, and then you would submit that document to the notary, and then the notary will call you. But when the notary would call you in the past, it will have already basically confirmed that the English translation, for example, was properly legally attested. Without it, they wouldn't do it. And so that in itself would take quite a bit of time in the past to kind of go back and forth between the legal translation and the mismatch of the two languages. Some notaries, for example, would not allow, if somebody wanted to do a POA just to to simplify and expedite the process, they only wanted to do it in Arabic. But some notaries would not in the past allow for a non-Arabic speaker to only do a notary in Arabic. So that has evolved as well, to the point of, Tim, get ready for this. Now you can even do it in other languages other than just English. For example, you could do it in Russian. We've seen POAs that are in Russian. So English and Russian, for example. And so to do a language like that, it's, you know, not that Russian is an uncommon language, but imagine if you were still required to do a legal translation by a legal translator to certify the Russian translation is the same. It's even longer process than if you are just doing that with the English language. So these days, basically, there's no more requirement of a legal translation. So you could do Arabic and Japanese or Arabic and Chinese, and whatever it is you put in there, it will no longer now require a legal translation stamp. And so you can use whatever language you want. So Arabic plus whatever other language.
What about general requirements for a power of attorney? Who can grant a POA and for what?
Yes, so there are certain limitations, and as we mentioned earlier, because the POAs are subject to the UAE civil transactions law, there are specific provisions in this law that kind of govern who can give the relationship of the principal and agent, and who has the authority to give such authority. And so one specific example is that whoever the principal, and that is whoever gives the POA, has to be of a legal age, which is 21. So right. Somebody who's 18 cannot give a POA. So I would not be able to give you the POA, Tim. I'm sorry. So that is one requirement. You have to be at least 21 years old, which is legal age. The other requirement also is that both the principal and the agent must have full mental capacity and basically consent in order to create this kind of agency relationship. So, for example, if somebody is senile or mentally unstable or old, then they arguably they don't have the full mental capacity to give the POA, and that's kind of, and you know, POA could be challenged on the basis of that whoever gave the POA didn't have the proper mental capacity. Obviously, that needs to be formally established as well. You can't just claim somebody, oh, they did something on the basis of the POA, but they actually didn't have the mental capacity to give. So it has to be established either by the court or some sort of a confirmed medical report that someone does not have the right mental capacity. But for example, somebody who is mentally sort of challenged, special needs, and they consider to not have full mental capacity to issue the POA. So that POA would not be valid, but certainly their guardians would do it for them. You know, some of the other requirements for the POA to be valid is that the principal who is giving the POA obviously has to have the right to exercise those powers. So let's say I cannot give the powers to somebody to sell your house because that's your house or your car. The principal must have the right to exercise those powers. And also the agent must not be prohibited from exercising the powers delegated to them. So for example, I cannot give you the powers of a lawyer to represent somebody as a lawyer, because even though I'm a lawyer, but you are not a lawyer, so I cannot give you my lawyer power, so to speak, to act as a lawyer. Mm-hmm. So that's another limitation. And also, so the purpose and the subject matter of this, the agency relationship, also has to be predefined. So I have to tell you, like, I give you this power of attorney not just to be me. I give you the power of attorney to do what? There has to be a specific definition of this sort of agency, the scope of their agency relationship. Also another limitation is the agent can act on behalf of the principal only for the matters that he's assigned by proxy. This means that the subject matter of an agency cannot be a transaction or dealing that exclusively requires like the presence of the principal and individual. I'll give you one example specifically. It's I'd say banks, right, dealing with my bank account. So the banks will not allow for me to maybe manage your bank account, even if I have a power of attorney from you, even the power of attorney specifically gives me those powers, because the bank deems that for something like this, it's the principal, i.e., you know, you, Tim, have to, the individual that has to appear for them to work with you. For example, same thing, let's say in the criminal cases, let's say I wanted, if there's somebody that who wants someone else to appear on their behalf before the authorities. And they'll give them the power of attorney for that, but the authorities want to talk to the individual specifically. So, you can give those powers to somebody in the POA, but they will not be enforceable because the authorities will not allow for someone else to appear on the basis of the POA. So those are some general kind of limitations and conditions that are attached to validity and enforceability of the power of attorneys.
Would you characterize it as a I don't know, is it a commercial relationship?
It can be either. It can either be a commercial relationship in exchange for some kind of remuneration or a gratuitous relationship. So let's say okay. you just need me to help you with something. So you just give me the POA and I'll do it for you. There's no commercial exchange. So it doesn't have to be like often POAs are granted to family members just to kind of help act for different family members. So that's not really a commercial relationship so much. More of a gratuitous, but then there's a lot of POAs that are given, for example, to lawyers. That's, you know, that's a commercial relationship. To real estate agents, that's a commercial relationship. And overall, like basically whoever it is that has the agent who holds the powers has an expectation of reasonable costs to be compensated for the services they provide, acting on the basis of POA.
What kinds of powers can you include in a power of attorney? Do you give an individual the power to act on your behalf generally, or how specific do you have to be?
So the law, the civil transaction law, does not actually limit the scope of the power of attorney beyond what I just mentioned. Right. A few other kind of requirements for a valid power of attorney, but otherwise it can be either very general, it can be very specific. Now I have my own view of what it should be, but by law, it can be a very general POA or it can be something very specific to, let's say, you help me rent my property out and nothing else, or you help me go and pick up a document from someone. It can be very, very specific. So the individual can give a power of attorney to act on their behalf in a range of different types of matters. So for example, representation before authorities, any kind of government authorities, or just real estate. I just want you to only represent me in real estate matters and only with private parties, not even authorities. Or it can have commercial powers. I give you the power to sort of manage my business. Or it can have legal powers, such as, you know, I give you the powers to, represent me in court. So these are just some examples of broad examples of the powers that can be included in the POAs. And otherwise, it's up to the choice of the individual whether they want the powers to be limited or broad. But I am a big proponent of very limited and specific powers.
Okay. Well, what are some of the more common examples of specific powers of attorney?
So one example is, let's say, power of attorney for the sale of property. That's one that is very common in the UAE, and that's because there's so many property transactions that go on here all the time, and a lot of people either don't live in the UAE or travel too much, and so they find it more convenient to grant somebody else, a real estate agent in particular, for example, or someone else to represent them in property transactions. So there'll be very specific POA just to sell a property, for example, under specific payment conditions. And that's, by the way, is listed in very specific also laws or provisions in the law, the civil transactions law, for example, that specific provisions for POAs for property transactions are outlined in Articles 9, 40, 41, and 42 of the UAE civil transactions law. So that's how specific the law is to govern that specific power of attorney. Also, it could be a specific power of attorney in the corporate capacity to, for example, sell a portion of their shares in a specific company. So the POA would state, I give you the powers to sell my shares in such and such company. So that's another example. Or it could be based on specific area or geographical location. Let's say you want to either set up a company or sell a property in a specific free zone, let's say the DIFC. Right, and that's the Dubai International Financial Center, which is sort of a separate legal authority as well, because it's subject to its own laws. So let's say you just wanted to have someone to represent you only in the DIFC, so you can limit the power of attorney to only represent you in the DIFC. Another example of a specific power of attorney is that you can actually create like a joint ability to act on your behalf. So you're giving the power of attorney to multiple people to work for you jointly. So in other words, I want Ludmila, let's say, and Adriana to only represent me in joint capacity. So that's another form of a specific POA. Or you can give me, going back to the example of property sale, you don't just give me the POA or the authority to sell your property, but only for a specific price. So you give me authority to sell a property, specific property, for a specific price. And that specific price would be mentioned in the language of the POA itself. So these are some examples of very specific POAs.
Okay. Can you get POAs issued just for the, is it only for the UAE? I think that's what I'm asking. Yeah. Yeah.
No, not anymore. In the past, perhaps that was kind of, was almost by default, that was the only types of POAs that would be issued here. And that's because all POAs in the past were in Arabic. So like if you want to use a POA in the US, you're sort of doing it in Arabic was, it would be a little counterproductive, mm-hmm. for example, right? So, but these days, oh no, the lot of the POAs that are issued in the UAE are issued for many different countries. And so legally, there's no limitation. The POA has to be used in the UAE alone. So you would have to define it in the language of the POA. So if you want it to be used in specific countries, you can say, I want it to be used in Australia or in France, or in China. And as long as that country will rely or will enforce this kind of POA, the authorities here will issue. So in other words, the notaries will sign off to the POA to be used elsewhere. Not only that, now you can even have, as I mentioned earlier, since you can include other languages in the POA, it's a lot easier. And now you can see there's a lot more sense to get a POA here for the purpose of using elsewhere, because you can right away, you can actually have multiple languages. So we've seen recently POAs that have Arabic and Russian. So, and it was a POA that was not only in Arabic and Russian, but it was only for Russia. So there were actually no powers that were going to be dealt with in the UAE, but all for the transactions in Russia. So that's an interesting example. That's an evolution, by the way, that didn't sort of exist in the way that exists today.
What happens if an agent breaches a certain condition imposed by the principal, or if an agent acts without reserve to imposed restrictions?
So there could be several and severe repercussions and penalties, and they will be both under civil law and the criminal law. So there could be some serious criminal liabilities that are attached to the agent's breach of his obligations towards the principal, and also civil. So, for example, in the event the agent incurs any losses or damages on behalf of the principal, then the principal can has a recourse against the agent by way of sort of looking for monetary compensation through the court. So you're, let's say, caused by an agent's error or negligence. So let's say you gave me a power of attorney to sell your car, and in the process, I damaged the car because I was being negligent or I made a mistake. So there you'll be able to have to use that to seek compensation for the damage that I caused to your car, for example. Then sort of the criminal sanctions are even more interesting in the UAE, because the law, the crimes and punishment law, the UAE criminal code, so to speak, is quite specific about what can happen if somebody misuses the POA. So, for example, under Article 453, there's pretty severe punishment for anybody who like either embezzles or uses or disperses money or documents or any kind of movable property to inflict damage to the rightful owners. So there's very specific criminal penalties. There's also under the criminal law, there's what's called a breach of trust, which is a misdemeanor that is punishable by a jail sentence or a fine. So let's say you give me the POA to represent you, and I go and I use that POA to, you know, breach your trust, and I go and I sell one of your assets or transfer something that's valuable to you or act kind of detrimental to your interests. So that would be me breaching your trust. So there's specific criminal sanctions that are attached to that kind of conduct, which are punishable by jail sentence or a fine. And also, you know, similarly, if a principal breaches their obligations towards the agent also has a recourse against the principal. So for example, you know, if the principal me or you, the agent, gives me the powers to do something, and that's a commercial relationship, and I'm supposed to do something for you and in exchange for compensation. And if you don't compensate me, that gives me the right to come after you on the basis POA, showing that you there was an obligation that you have to comply with. So that's, you know, that's kind of like a commercial case that, or a civil case that I would be able to bring as an agent against the principal.
How is an agency relationship terminated? How do you put paid to it?
So there's different ways to terminate an agency relationship. One is de facto, which is terminated either by the principal or the agent. And that's outlined in different provisions in the civil transactions law. But for example, if the work for which you've granted the POA has been done or performed, that basically kind of makes the POA by de facto terminated. So let's say you gave me a POA to sell the property and I sold that property. So that the POA then gets terminated as long as the scope of the POA was just for that particular scope. Or if you give the POA that's limited in time, so if you do for 6 months and the 6 months have passed, so that also by de facto terminates the relationship. When the principal has passed away, so the death of the principal. And this, by the way, is important because we have over the years on many, many different occasions been approached by, well, can I use the POA of such and such person who's passed away? Because I have the POA, I still have the POA. Well, no, by de facto or by default, the POA ends or is terminated or expires when the person who granted it, i.e. the principal, has passed away. So at that point, obviously, whoever had given the POA has no more legal capacity to give so to act on a POA that has been given by a person who is now deceased, in fact, is criminal, so, and fraud. Also, another way to terminate is by the principal himself or herself. So let's say if you give me the POA and now you want to terminate it, you can cancel at any point in time. Equally, so I as an agent can also terminate. So I can go to the notary and say, I don't want this POA, please cancel it. I don't want a POA to be issued in my name. So these are kind of the different ways of canceling POAs.
Okay, well, how does a principal actually go through what's the process for a principal to cancel a POA?
Perhaps the easiest way to do it these days is to go to one of these physical notaries, right? Because right. If you want to cancel the POA, usually kind of it's something either urgent or important to you and you want to go physically, feel physically that, yeah, look, now I have the POA, it's canceled, I have it right in my hand. So that's the easiest and quickest way to do it is just to go to the notary physically and cancel, and it's all done very quickly. And then the other ways to do it is through the online process, the same way you would apply to have the POA notarized through the same kind of portal, you would also apply to have it canceled. To be sure or to kind of err on the side of caution, you should also serve the cancellation on the other person. So it's one thing when the POA is with the authorities, the government knows that you have sort of canceled the POA, but if somebody holds the POA in their hand, they may not know that you've actually canceled it. So you need to notify them that the POA has been canceled so they don't later have an excuse of like, well, I did not know that you had canceled it. So to do it right, you need to also serve the other side of the cancellation so that later on, if they act on the canceled POA, that also constitutes fraud. But if they had not known about it, then obviously they have an excuse that they did not know. I guess in short, you have to cancel it through the notary and serve it through the official channels.
Just a couple of more questions, Ludmilla. In your experience, what are some of the more common examples of abuse of powers of attorney that you've seen?
Over the years, I've seen many, many different abuses. And then because of that, I have to tell you practice of the POA has evolved tremendously for the better, and in particular how the notaries treat POAs and the documents that they require for certain transactions to issue the POA. So for example, in the past, I've seen a lot of abuse by real estate agents. So where clients would give them POAs to sell the properties, and they were just very general POAs to sell properties and or and do everything else. And so the agents would sell the POAs and will take the money, and then for one reason or another, not transfer the money to the principal or to the property owner. So I've seen a lot of issues with real estate POAs, and that's basically for selling properties. Then also seen some issues with POAs that have very broad powers that includes delegation powers. And what's a delegation power? It's, for example, when you give me the POA, and amongst all the other powers, it's a general POA that gives me the right to do everything for you and also gives me the right to delegate those same powers to someone else. Mm. So these kind of general POAs are all too frequent and common. And these, the delegation, many of them include the delegation power. And so, and in many cases, the delegation power is useful. For example, for if you give me a power of attorney as a legal consultant to represent you, and then I also then need to empower someone like a local advocate to represent you. So instead of you giving different POAs because you're not in town, you just want things to be quickly done. So you want me to also delegate your POA to a local advocate. So that's for us as lawyers, how we use the delegation powers. So I could use that same POA to delegate my powers to the local advocate. Now that doesn't cancel my powers. It just also gives somebody else the ability to represent you. So these delegation powers can be quite dangerous. And I have seen this in the past, in particular with real estate agents, where there was multiple delegations. So often the principal had no idea who were the different real estate agents or the different people that would have had the POA from basically representing the principal because of these delegation powers. So, for example, you would give me the delegation power, I would delegate your powers to person number two, and then the person number two will delegate to person number three, and the person number three will delegate to person number four. And I have seen this, Tim, in my practice here. I've seen this especially in real estate transactions, because there were a lot of people back then that didn't live in the UAE, let's say had multiple properties, they'll give to a real estate company or real estate agent powers. I mean, these are my specific examples. I'm not trying to pick on real estate agents. It's just that these are my examples that I have seen. And because of that, over the years, the authorities have made the requirements for POAs a lot stricter. So, for example, now if you want to sell to give me a POA to sell your property, you need to specifically mention that property, one. But before you mention a specific property, you need to show to the authorities that you actually own that property. So that's you have to go and show the title deed. Previously was the original title deed. They wouldn't even take copies now because most title deeds have QR codes. So they can verify, the authority can, or the notary can verify that the QR code is valid. So in other words, you can no longer just give me a POA to sell your properties. There has to be a POA for a specific property that mentions specific property. And for the notary to actually add the stamp to that, they have to first see that you, in fact, you own that property. So that's one requirement. The other one, for example, is that the notaries will not sign a POA that where I'm delegating you my powers, for example, as a manager of a company, because those powers I cannot delegate to you. I cannot delegate my responsibility, for example, as a manager of the company, right? Because I'm the manager. If I'm the one listed as a manager, I cannot delegate those to you, those powers to you. So there's some limitations there. We've seen some, for example, abuses where somebody issues a power of attorney using somebody else's credentials through this sort of UAE pass through because they have access to someone's phone, for example, spouse's phone. They would create a POA, and then we've seen recently an example where such POA was created to sell properties in Russian, and it was in Russian language, and it was like fraudulently created. And so that was another example. So you need to be very, very cautious and careful, especially now, because on the one hand, it's a great benefit. So it's much easier to give the POA because you can do it online and you can do it through all this UAE pass and the court portals, but that's a huge benefit, but it also carries risks, because if somebody else has access to your phone, and they could basically do all that as if they were you. So basically these are kind of some of the big abuses we've seen. If you give POAs to somebody who works like in a company, for example, do you give them POAs to sign documents on behalf of the company? And then they just, the powers are too broad, and then they get the company indebted and into all sorts of liabilities on the basis of signing documents on behalf of the company. So you know, or transferring shares. We've seen that as well, where shares were transferred from one party to another on the basis of POA. So lots and lots of different examples. And because of that, now the authorities are a lot more, a lot stricter in terms of what POAs they use. And also one of the requirements, for example, is that they now want the POAs to be sort of to be updated. In the past, you could have POAs that were issued 10 years ago and they'd still be used. Now it's it's less about by law, it's more by practice. Let's say certain authorities or certain parties may say, listen, anything that's more than a year old, I'm not going to use unless you bring the proof to me that that POA is still active. So that's why it's important for anybody out there who's given POAs, for example, years ago, that if you don't want those POAs issued anymore, you should actually go and actively cancel them, because it's actually easy to go. Let's say if you gave me a POA 10 years ago, and you never canceled it, I can go now and I can say, listen, I can still represent Tim. And the authorities will say, well, no, but I need to make sure that this POA is still valid. What I will do is I'll go back to the notary. And because you had never canceled the POA, the notary will stamp, yes, the POA is still valid because it never been canceled. Mm. So that's why this is an important note to anyone who's given POAs in the past, that you should make sure that you cancel all of them, because it's very easy to get that document from the courts that the POA is still valid. And by the way, on that note is that if anyone doesn't remember which POAs they might have given to whom, the best way to do it is they can just go to a notary and say, okay, here's me. Like, who can you search the system and see who I might have given POAs to, so that at least you have a full picture of who else is out there running around with legal authorities to represent you.
It's a really, really good point, actually. Final question, Ludmilla. What are the main conclusions from our discussion today, do you think? And I guess more importantly, just highlight the lessons from today's discussion.
So the lessons, you know, one is POA can be extremely dangerous. So if they're too broad, they can be extremely dangerous. So be very scrutinizing who you authorize to act on your behalf, one, and what powers you include, two. So POA should be limited in scope, and they should also be limited in time. So you shouldn't just have an indefinite POA. You should at least limit it by 3 years, 2 years, but something. Right. Also, you know, one important note is that banks do not rely on POAs. They will not use POAs. So even if you have specific language in the POA that, let's say, authorizes me to do things for you and manage your bank account, the banks themselves will not accept the POA for management of your account. For property transfers, as I mentioned earlier, the authorities now require that you actually prove that you own that property. So that's one of the limitations and therefore protection for principal. So in general, then you need to be very judicial about who you give the POAs, especially with the powers of delegation. And therefore, if you don't remember who you've given the POAs, you should just go and make the effort and go to the notary and find out who are all the different people that may you have your POA. And if you don't want those people to have those POAs, cancel them. Even if, you know, nobody has used them for decades or for years, even if you have... you don't even know if the person is around anymore or not. So you should just not have any POAs out there that you absolutely do not need, and absolutely the people that you don't necessarily know. And also, you know, what a lot of people do is they'll give a POA for a specific, let's say, transaction, but they're broader POA, let's say sell the property, and then the property sold, okay, and everything was done. So, well, okay, then go and cancel the POA because you don't need it, because you know, the POA you gave to, let's say, somebody to represent you in the real estate, they sold the property, everything is fine, but you still have given them the POA that includes other powers. So in cases like this, just, you know, make the effort, go and cancel the POA.
That is another episode of Logical, the ins and outs, indeed, of POAs, powers of attorney. Thank you for watching and or listening. And thanks, as ever, to our legal expert, Ludmilla Yarmalova, the managing partner at Yarmalova and Plethka. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
Find us at LY Law on social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn. Our podcasts are free at lylawyers.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like a legal question answered in an episode of Logical, or you want to talk to a qualified UE experienced legal professional, click contact at lylawyers.com.